I'm going to jump into share screen.
On.
Okay, can everybody see the screen?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, if for whatever reason the screen is, I've resized it to a different size today. So if for whatever reason the size of the screen is not, is too small or too big, let me know. I don't know how it ends up coming across on the other end. But it was just easier for me to see everybody and keep the screen open at the same time. Okay, so we had spent some time last week looking at the story of Mephibosheth, not just in the context of the of our perek, which is Perek Tet, and really the, I would say, the nicest part of the story of Mephibosheth, where David comes across as trying to do a great chesed for the house of Shaul and for the house of Yonatan. I'm getting a feedback for a second here, so I'm just going to put everybody on a quick mute, and then you have the ability to unmute at will. All right. So just, so Perek Tet, David inquires about a descendant of Yonatan. Is there a child? Hachi Yeshod Asher Natal LeBeit Shaul. And he meets Tziva, who, as we said, is not the nicest of people. But Tziva is that Eved that is controlling all of the possessions and lands and household of Shaul. And he tells David that there is an heir to the house of Shaul, a child of Yonatan, this Mephibosheth, who is Necher Aglaim, and he's sitting out in the Gilad area in Lodvar. And David calls him, David promises him that as a continuation of his promise to the house of Yonatan and his breed with Yonatan, he assures Mephibosheth that Mephibosheth will live in the palace and eat literally on the king's table. Mephibosheth ochel al shulchani ke'achad mibnei ha'melech. And that's how the parak ends. Mephibosheth yoshev b'Yerushalayim ki al shulchan ha'melech tamid ochel. He's in Yerushalayim. He eats at the king's table. V'pisech al shtei raglav. And you kind of have this image almost of David adopting this young boy who is Necher Raglayim and kind of a descendant of the house of Shaul as a last act of chesed to Yonatan and to the allegiance that he owes Yonatan. And that's where the perek ends, a very beautiful perek in the sense that David kind of rights a wrong that's been there for many years. Unfortunately—
Rabbi, why does the Torah keep emphasizing that the guy was lame?
Because it's a critical part of the story. It's a story of how he became lame back at the beginning, and ultimately why he doesn't go with David to Yush, why he's sitting out in Lo Davar, and why he's being adopted by another family, and why he has to be cared for. Right? It's all part of the story. You can't ignore it because it's not tangential to the story. It's a core piece of why David has to look after him. He can't look after himself, and ultimately why he doesn't go with David to you when David exiles from Yerushalayim and why David blames him. Like all the pieces of the story revolve around that piece of information. So it can't be omitted. It's not like it's politically correct to just omit it. And it doesn't work that way. Not that political correctness was ever part of the language of Tanakh, but that's a separate discussion. Then we move to Perek Tzayin. And Perek Tzayin, and we skipped, we looked at three stories of Mephibosheth. We looked at the whole sort of arc of the story of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth in Perek Tzayin, or David, I should say, in Perek Tzayin, comes across in a very different way. Perek Tzayin, David is running from Yerushalayim after the rebellion of Avshalom, right just at the beginning of the rebellion of Avshalom, where David now finds himself forced to exile himself from Yerushalayim in order to survive. And so he gathers all, at the end of Perek Tedvav, actually, he gathers all of his people. I'll skip that for now. He gathers all of his people together and he leaves Yerushalayim and he leaves Avshalom in charge. And then we read the encounter with David as he's leaving. Tziva, we haven't seen since Perek Tet, right? Tziva comes out to greet him. So it's number. And in that moment, he brings him provisions and he brings him donkeys and food and wine to drink, as if to say to David, I'm with you. I'm going to, even though I was the servant of the house of Shaul, I'm putting my chips in with your fate. And David is particularly bothered by the absence of Mephibosheth. And he says to him, Aye ben Adonecha, where is Mephibosheth? Where is your master's son? And Tziva makes the accusation that Mephibosheth decided to stay in Yerushalayim and wait for the outcome of this rebellion to enable the Malchus to come back to him. Yinei Yosher b'Yerushalayim ki amar ayom yeshivu li Beit Yisrael et machut avi. Which is clearly a lie. And not only is it a lie, it's almost an unbelievable lie. Because in no universe was Avshalom going to launch this rebellion to hand the Malchus back to the house of Shaul. Avshalom did not go through this entire rebellion in order to hand the reins of kingship back to somebody else. He was going to hold on to it for himself. But for whatever reason, David is willing to accept that Mephibosheth believes that this is all done in order to restore the kingdom to the house of Shaul. And so he proclaims a judgment that says, Hinei lachat kol asher leMephibosheth. I'm going to take all the lands of Mephibosheth and now hand them to you. I'm going to accuse Mephibosheth of treason. Guilty of treason, your lands and property is confiscated and belongs to the state. So accusing Mephibosheth of treason, David rules summarily against Mephibosheth and hands all of the lands over to Tziva, who he knows is a false and slimy character, and yet he does so. And that's the first question. Why does he judge so quickly Mephibosheth? Why is he not willing to even wait until he hears Mephibosheth's side of the story? And then we read a couple of chapters later, after the rebellion, after Mephibosheth dies, after Avshalom dies in battle, and David returns to Yerushalayim, and we find the encounter as he approaches Yerushalayim in Perek Yotet. Actually, you know what? I'm going to leave Perek Yotet Zion open and go to Yotet this way. So go to Perek Yotet, Shmuel Bet Perek Yotet, and there we. Mephibosheth Yerad Likrat HaMelech, Mephibosheth ben Shaul comes to greet the king, and he's in mourning. He's been in sackcloth. He didn't do his beard, didn't wash his clothes. He's literally been in mourning since Yerushalayim, since David left. And as he approaches Yerushalayim, as David approaches Yerushalayim, the king says to him, the first words out of his mouth, Lama lo alachta imi Mephibosheth? Why didn't you come with me? And he explains that Avdidi Mani, Matziva, tricked me, he lied to me. He said he was going to gather his donkey and go run after you. And because I may ride, he was going to get the horse or the donkey that I could ride on and go with the king because I'm lame. I couldn't go and get the donkey myself. So he set off to go and saddle the donkey and get us ready. And then he disappeared. And he lied, he said that he accused me of treason. He slandered me. My Lord, my King, is like an angel of God, what you have done for me. My father's house were deserving of death at the hand of the king. And instead, you allowed me to eat at your table. What right do I have yet that I should cry to the king? David passes judgment. He says, I hear your story. I hear Tziva's story. I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to determine who's right and who's wrong. I'm just going to say, divide the land. Remember, the whole thing is about the land, because if Mephibosheth is guilty of treason, then the land gets confiscated. If Tziva is guilty of treason, then his land gets confiscated. Either way, David says, I'm not deciding. Divide it up. Tachluku et asadeh. And of course, Mephibosheth's response is, he can have it all. Gam et hakol yikach. Acharei sheba adoni ha-melech b'shalom el beito. As long as the king returned home safely, a kind of a echo of what will later become the famous judgment of Shlomo HaMelech with the baby and the two mothers, right? Yachloku, and one mother says she can have it all. Although in that case, Shlomo realized from that sentence who the real mother was. In this case, David remains deaf to the claim and leaves it as Tachluku et Asadeh. And we ended the shiur last week with a real challenge. I don't understand what David is trying to do here and why he's so almost cruel, cold and cruel to Mephibosheth, when all he wanted to do is to express to Mephibosheth, you know, that sense of chesed, to Yonatan, that sense of chesed and what he owed Yonatan and the promise to Yonatan and the breach with Yonatan. So this really is a difficult moment in the story of David HaMelech. To add to the depth of the tragedy of this story, Chazal in the Gemara, and I think I shared this, did we look at the last line of the Gemara about the split of the kingdom? That's where I sort of wanted to pick up from. So we'll start from here. So the Gemara in Shabbos that addresses the question of David's behavior in all of this. And there's two opinions there, Rav and Shmuel. Shmuel seems to try to exonerate David on some level, and maybe Mephibosheth was really duplicitous. It's unclear exactly how Shmuel learns the story in the text, but clearly the Gemara's final word lies with the opinion of Rav, and so for now, that'll suffice for us. Rav Amar, Kibel David Lashon Hara. Rav says, in this moment, David is guilty of listening and accepting the Lashon Hara. Now, Lashon Hara has become a phrase that has become somewhat overused. You talk about somebody's, you like their outfit today, and you didn't like their outfit today, and suddenly that's called Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, in the original context of it, in the Torah, is slander that has extraordinary consequences. When you talk about what Tziva did when Tziva accused Mephibosheth of treason, that was Lashon Hara. In the classic context of what Lashon Hara is, we're talking about slander, we're talking about character assassination, we're talking about kind of speech that that is destructive in the highest way. So the Gemara says, Kibel David Lashon Hara. In this moment, David accepted, heard and accepted this Lashon Hara. When David asked, where is the son of your master? Meaning, where is Mephibosheth? Why didn't he come with us as we left Yerushalayim? And Tziva said, he accuses him of treason, waiting for the kingdom to be restored to him, siding with the rebellion. How do I know that David accepted this Lashon Hara, that David didn't just hear it and reject it? So the Gemara quotes the next pasuk, which is because he hands Tziva all of the lands of Mephibosheth. The Gemara could have actually easily have quoted the other piece of the story, which is David's response here when he says, even after he hears Mephibosheth's justification, reasonable explanation. He's a cripple. He can't do it himself. He was relying on Tziva to go. Janet, that's why I said to you before that the role that he's in the Nechei Raglayim is so central to the story because it keeps popping up in each part of the story. And so, but for whatever reason, the Gemara takes the first part of this sentence, which is that David hands the lands over to Mephibosheth. And even after he hears Mephibosheth's side, he hands over lands over to Tziva. And even after he hears the justification from Mephibosheth. He only divides the land as if it's a suffix. He doesn't side with Mephibosheth. And then the Gemara says the following, which is really an astounding statement.
Rabbi, why doesn't the king keep the land? Why does he give it to Ziva?
That's his discretion. Ziva demonstrated loyalty and Mephibosheth in his mind did not. He can do with it what he wants. So he gave it over to Ziva as a reward for his loyalty. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, this is really one of the saddest statements in the story. Same Rav, okay, same opinion, same Rav. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, b'sha'ash amar David l'mefiboshet, ata v'tziva tachlaku et ha-sadeh. That moment when David ruled, they're going to divide the land, and did not hear, process, understand the depth of Tziva's duplicity and Mephibosheth's innocence. Yet Stabatko v'Amralo, a heavenly voice came out and said, "You, David, wanted to divide the land." Okay, so your kingdom shall now be divided. And Rechavam and Yeravam, right? Rechavam ben Shlomo and Yeravam ben Nevat, a generation later, will divide your land and your kingdom. And somehow the Gemara links the tragedy of this moment in David's life to what eventually will be the split of the kingdom. And then the Gemara goes on to say, if that's the case, right, so then it has more consequences than just the split of the kingdom. Amar Yehuda Marav, Ilmale lo kibel David lashon hara. If David hadn't accepted this slander, lo nechlaka malchut beit David, the kingdom of David would not have been divided. And therefore, lo avdu Yisrael avodah zarah, they wouldn't have worshipped idols. And therefore, lo galinu me'atzeinu, we would never have been exiled. And it all starts from this moment when David accepted Tziva's lashon hara and slander against Mephibosheth. Now that's a very wide sweeping statement and a little bit exaggerated, but my particular interest today is to look at this connection between David's declaration, his judgment that the lands that we're talking about should be split unjustifiably, clearly, to ultimately the split of the kingdom itself. Why did that link catch Chazal's attention? Now, it's true, Chazal have a tendency to kind of look at midrashically, to look at trends and see patterns, connections from one end of the spectrum to the other, right? So they'll sometimes find hints at stories and weave together stories that don't necessarily see connections in the text, but in themes of and patterns. In this particular case, I think Chazal did both. I think they found a textual connection as well as a pattern that caught their attention, and I wanted to focus there. So this is Perek Yotev. This is where we were up to. And we're going to spend some time looking at this Perek, right? So this is the Perek where David is coming back to Yerushalayim after the rebellion of Avshalom is put down. And he encounters Mephibosheth, and we have, unfortunately, the tragic conversation about whether you accept or don't accept Mephibosheth's explanation of the events. There's another couple of episodes in this parak related to David's return. I'm going to come back to them in a few minutes. But I want to look at the opening psukim of the next parak. So literally from here, and there's a sequence, there's a connection, or there's a flow from the events of Perek Yotet to the beginning of Perek Chaf. I'll explain that flow in a few minutes, but I want to look at the beginning of Perek Chaf. As David is returning to Yerushalayim, at the same moment, literally the next after his declaration against Mephibosheth, divide the land, another conflict brews we'll talk about, and then we come to the following statement. There, as he comes to Yerushalayim, or as he's approaching, Visham nikra ish b'liyal lishmo sheva ben bichri. Ishimini. He comes across a very wicked person, baseless, worthless individual, ish b'liyal. B'liyal is a term we've had a number of times. The most famous individual referred to as b'liyal, lo yadu et Hashem, was...
The sons of the Kohen.
Correct. The sons of Eli, Chofni Pinchas b'nei Eli, beginning of Shmuel Aleph, ultimately responsible for the destruction of the Mishkan in Shiloh.
So it's not a compliment.
No, it's not a compliment. The Bli'al comes from the word Bli'ya'al, or Ole Bli'worth, without worth, baseless, worthless. Sheva ben Bichri, from the tribe of Binyamin. Vayitka b'shofar, he blows the shofar. Vayomer, remember, this is after the rebellion of Avshalom has failed, and David is now returning to Yerushalayim. Vayomer, he proclaimed, Ein lanu chelek b'David, v'lo nachala lanu b'ven Yishai, ish la'olav Yisrael. Everybody, hear my proclamation. We have no portion in David, we have no inheritance in the son of Yishai, every man to his tents, O Israel, which is a very poetic declaration of war, rebellion, break. Tribe of Benjamin, what business is the tribe of Benjamin having to say, we have no share in the leadership of David or in the inheritance of Ben Yishai? Ish lo'olav Yisrael. What's he saying here?
He's calling for a rebellion.
Right. He's calling for a rebellion led by the tribe of Binyamin, which is the tribe of Shaul. So you would get an echo of the old conflict, the civil war with which Shmuel Bet began between the followers of Shaul and the followers of David. And in fact, it takes root. Vayal kol ish Yisrael me'acharei David, the men of Israel left from following David, Acharei Sheva ben Bichri, many of them, and went to follow Sheva ben Bichri. V'ish Yudat of Kubim Malkam minei Yarden ad Yerushalayim, and the people of Judah continued to cleave to their king, from Yarden to Yerushalayim, as they come to Yerushalayim. And this is a very scary moment, because if this rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri took root, this would ultimately split the kingdom again, with potentially disastrous consequences, even more so than when it would eventually split the kingdom, because this is between Binyamin and Yehuda. I think we've talked about the fact that Yerushalayim is the border between Binyamin and Yehuda specifically, in order to keep Binyamin and Yehuda together at all times. So even later in history, during the days of Rechavam and Yeravam, when the kingdom ultimately split, it split north of Binyamin. It split between Ephraim and the south, in order to keep the two tribes that surround Yerushalayim together to preserve the integrity of Yerushalayim. Had this rebellion taken root and Binyamin would have rebelled against David, it would have destroyed Yerushalayim before Yerushalayim began. Very dangerous moment. But I want to come back to this phrase. Listen to this phrase very carefully. Ein lanu chelek b'David. This is the declaration of rebellion against David. Sorry, I need to highlight this. Here we go. Ein lanu chelek b'David, v'lo nachala lanu b'ven Yishai, ish lo'olav Yisrael. We have no portion in David, we have no nachla in the kingdom of Ben Yishai, every man of Israel to his tent. Right? That's the declaration of rebellion. Two generations later, post-Shlomo, a generation and a half later, right? Post-Shlomo, David's grandson is an individual by the name of Rechavam ben Shlomo. And we read in Malachim Aleph, Perek Yud Aleph. Actually, I'm going to jump to Perek Yud Bet for a minute. We read in Perek Yud Bet.
When the
people saw that Rechavam ben Shlomo did not heed the counsel or the request of Yeravam ben Nevat. So they responded and said, and this is the beginning of the split of the kingdom. What portion do we have in David or in the inheritance of Ben Yishai? Each man of Israel to his tents. So if you look at these two psukim, it's fascinating. The verse that describes Shevet ben Bichri's rebellion against David in the immediate aftermath of the story of Mephibosheth, literally half a parak later, is exactly the same language with which Yeravam ben Nevat begins the rebellion against the kingdom of Rechavam that splits the kingdom. I put these two phrases side by side so you can see it. This is exactly what Chazal mean when they say that the result of David's actions towards Mephibosheth leads to the split of the kingdom. It's not just an arbitrary, oh, David misbehaved here, so we're going to split the kingdom there. Right? There is a reason why Chazal saw this connection, and it's borne out by the language that of these two rebellions. The aftermath of Mephibosheth is Shevet ben Bichri, ein lenu chelek b'David v'lenachala b'ven Yishai, ish lo alav Yisrael. The aftermath of Rechavam ben Shlomo and Yeravam ben Nevat's split, which actually leads to the split of the kingdom, is the same phrase, ma lenu chelek b'David v'lenachala b'ven Yishai, lo alacha Yisrael. So that clearly indicates that where Chazal picked up this connection from, that Mephibosheth, that David's reaction to Mephibosheth has far more reaching consequences far more reaching than simply the question of his unfair treatment of Mephibosheth. Consequences are significant beyond just the story of Mephibosheth. And I want to come back to that part of the story because that's really where I think this we need to look at this. We'll come back to Perek Yutet, a couple of interesting observations. Number one, Pasuk Chaf Hey. When Mephibosheth comes out to greet David as David returns to Yerushalayim, Pasuk says, Umifibosheth ben Shaul yirad likrat ha-melech. What's odd about that phrase?
He's not ben Shaul, he's ben Yonatan.
Right. He's been ben Yonatan. We've had him introduced to us. We've referred to him as Mephibosheth ben Yonatan ben Shaul. But usually you associate with the father and then the grandfather, especially if the grandfather is of fame or significance. Now, it's true, B'nai Banim Arayim Kibanim, you can be a grandchild of somebody and be called their son. That's true. But because the story of Mephibosheth centers around his relationship to Yonatan and David's brit with Yonatan, which is why he is looking after Mephibosheth in the first place, to call him Ben Shaul here is really a strange moment. Like, why not just say Mephibosheth Ben Yonatan? It's almost as if when David sees Mephibosheth, he sees Mephibosheth as Ben Shaul and not only as Ben Yonatan. Like that lineage kind of comes to haunt David. And maybe that's part of what's troubling David, which is really so, again, it's all part of a pattern that is odd. David has been so respectful of Shaul and what Shaul represents, and the malchus of Shaul, even after Shaul's death, the great kina, his lament for him, etc. For him to kind of insult Mephibosheth, dismiss Mephibosheth, because he's Mephibosheth ben Shaul, only begs the question even further.
Rabbi, it's almost like he's not, he's also suffering some mental issue.
No, I'm not going. Well, people can do with David what they choose. I do not believe that David ever suffered from a mental lapse, a lapse in judgment, perhaps, and that's clear. But I'm not of the opinion that David suffered a mental lapse. I think he has good reason for this whole story, but we're going to see it.
Okay.
Do you think this was extra harsh, this whole thing of what's going to happen from that statement that he did between these two men? I mean, is it a little extra harsh from that one little statement?
It might be, but there's more to it. It might be, but there's more to it. So let's see what else emerges from this parak. Remember, my suggestion is that I think there's a context here that we haven't identified yet, but the context is very important. Remember this, so let's go back one step. Where we are at in the story in Shmuel Bet Perek Yotet, after the story of Batsheva, after the story of the rebellion of the tragedy of Amnon and Tamar, and the rebellion of Avshalom, David is now returning to Yerushalayim, having gone into exile. If you think about it, David, we haven't read the Perek about his conquest, but David had taken the kingdom of Israel and expanded into the largest empire of the world. Certainly Israel and possibly the region had seen to date, literally from the Nile to the Euphrates. And that was the story just prior, right? That's Perek Yud Aleph. That's just prior to the story of David and Batsheva and the aftermath it has with Amnon and Tamar and then the rebellion of Avshalom. David is forced into exile to go from the pinnacle of being the largest, strongest empire in the region to literally being a government in exile. David is forced to leave Yerushalayim with his head between his knees. And as he's running, the question of who's going with him, whose loyalty can he count on, is critical. David is hopeful that he'll return to Yerushalayim one day. And when he does, those who are loyal to him are a crucial part of the, the post of Shalom world. So I want to come back to, so this perek is David's return from exile. Now he has, it's the journey back. So he's sitting in Machanaim, he's sitting in the east side of the Yarden, and he's beginning to journey back to Yerushalayim. He's going to make his way slowly. So here's what I want to pick up on. Starting with Pasuk Bet. V'hamelech David, so he sent a message ahead to the Kohanei, to the two Kohanim, Tzadok and Evyatar. And he said to them, Dabru al Ziknei Yehuda, I want you to go and reach out to the elders of Judah and say to them, Lama tiyu acharonim lashivet ha-melech al beito. My dear elders of Judah, now is your moment. Don't be the last ones to welcome the king back. Udvar ko Yisrael ba el hamelech el beto. For the speech of all of Israel was come to the king to bring him house, meaning all of Israel was talking about bringing David home. So David reaches out through the Kohanim, the special delegation to the Ziknei Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, and says to them, I'm going to come back to Yerushalayim. I'm going to come back with everybody. You don't want to be the last ones. Achai atem, you are my brethren. Atzmi uvisari atem, you are my flesh and blood. Lamatiu acharonim lashivet ha-melech. Why should you be last to restore the king to his palace? Skip Yudalit, it's a different subject. The result is, Vayet et levav kol ish Yehuda ki ish echad. He was able to bring the heart of all of Yehuda as one toward him, to a closeness. Vayishlechu el ha-melech, and they sent a message back to the king, Shuv ata b'chol avadecha. Return you and all of your servants. Vayashav ha-melech, Vayavo ad ha-yarden. So the king begins his journey home, comes to the Yarden, v'yuda ba ha-gilgala. and he's greeted by Shevet Yehuda. Gilgal is just on the other side of the Yarden. He's greeted by the tribes of Judah. Lalechad likrat ha-melech, la'avir et ha-melech ha-tiyarte, to bring the king with a following. The following is the tribe of Judah, who have always been loyal to him. Remember David's early beginnings, where he was running around Shevet Yehuda, trying to protect them, etc. Right now he's the king of all of Israel, but he was in exile, and as he's returning, he's looking for those who will be loyal to him. And he reaches out to Shevet Yehuda, and he says to them, you know, you don't want to be the Johnny come lately, right? Don't come to the party late. So they come and they greet David when he's on the other side of the yard. I'm going to skip the piece of Shimon ben Gera. Let's go down to, then he has the encounter with Mephibosheth that we just talked about, where he proclaimed about Mephibosheth, divide the land, I don't want to hear it. And then we come to the following conversation. Perek, end of the same perek. Ve'avor kol amat yarden, ve'amelech ava, ve'avor amelech ha-gilgala. King came over to the Gilgal. Ve'chimahan avar imo, all of the people of Judah came with the king. And also half of the people of the tribes of Israel. And at that moment, he's greeted by the people of Israel. And here again, there's this distinction between the people of Judah and the people of Israel. Judah referring to the tribe of Judah, Israel referring to everybody else. V'nei kol ish Yisrael ba'im el ha-melech, v'yamu el ha-melech, they said to the king, Madua k'navucha achenu ish Yehuda, v'yaviru et ha-melech v'et beito et ha-yardein v'chol anshei David imo. Why have our brethren, the tribe of Judah, stolen the king away and brought the king and his household over the Yarden with all of David's men? What are we? We chopped liver? You went and you grabbed all of the tribe of Judah to bring you over the tribe of the Yarden? What are we, you not loyal subjects? Mayan kol ish Yehuda al ish Yisrael. So ish Yehuda responded to ish Yisrael. So again, the representation of the elders of the tribe of Judah and the elders of the kingdom of his, of the northern tribes, and said to them, David is silent in this conversation, Ki karov ha-melech elai. Yes, the king is our kin. King is of the tribe of Judah. Why should you be angry at this? Have we eaten of the king's at the king's cost? Have we taken the treasury money from the kingdom? Has he given us any gift? All it's been is a function of recognizing that the king is in the tribe of Judah. The tribe of Judah is his kin. So we came out to greet him first. So the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, Vayomer, Esa yadot li b'melech. What are you talking about? We're 10 times the part of the king than you. We're 10 tribes. You're one. We have 10 times the share of David's fame and loyalty. David, and in David too, we have more right than you. Sorry. Why have you despised us, made us small? And should it not be our job to bring the king home? The words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. I'm flabbergasted. What is this? They're fighting over who's more loyal to David. Who's closer to David? David, he's from the tribe of Judah. What are you talking about? We're 10 tribes. You're one, 10 to one. The Esri Yadot Libe Melech. But we are his kin, we are loyal, but we, this is the fight that's going on between Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael. And David in this fight is nowhere to be seen or heard. Next pasuk, literally next pasuk, Perek Chaf, pasuk Aleph, Ish Bliyal Lishmo Sheva Ben Bichri Ish Yemini, out of the tribe of Binyamin, part of that 10 tribes of the north of Israel, proclaims one man by the name of Sheva Ben Bichri, Vaitka B'Shofar, blows the shofar, and he says, done. Ein lanu chelik b'David, v'lo nachala lanu b'ven Yishai, Ish lo alav Yisrael. We're done. And out of this argument is ferments the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri that literally almost rips the kingdom apart early. Doesn't, David puts it down, Sheva ben Bichri never gets traction. Eventually Shlomo himself will deal with Sheva ben Bichri. But you understand why Chazal said that in the aftermath of the story of Mephibosheth, eventually led to the king, to the split of the kingdom. It's not about only his reaction to Mephibosheth. It's about the whole context of how David returns to Yerushalayim. David left Yerushalayim. David comes to Yerushalayim the first time. Here's the core message. David comes to Yerushalayim the first time in chapter 5. And he comes to Yerushalayim for one purpose only, which is to unite the tribes of Israel together in such a way that they should be perceived as the king over all of Israel and not over the tribe of Judah. Right? He is in Hebron. The moment the tribes come to him, he says, fine, we're going to unite the kingdom under one banner in Yerushalayim. Fast forward from chapter 5 to chapter 19, and David's second arrival in Yerushalayim in the aftermath of everything that has been that has transpired, but he comes back to Yerushalayim leading the tribe of Judah, or at least the tribe of Judah first. And it's David who reached out to them. And the subsequent conflict that it created seeds the seeds of rebellion. And Chazal saw those seeds of rebellion take root, not then, but two generations later, in the days of Yerovam ben Nevat. Not a surprise.
Where's the 12th tribe, unless Yehuda and Binyamin are together?
So remember, Levi is never part of the question. There's only ever 12. In this particular case, it's Yehuda, the 10 tribes don't include Levi. Yehuda is the tribe in the south. Levi is kind of scattered. Many years later, when the kingdom is split, Binyamin stays with Judah. It's complicated, but I'm going to leave that for the beginning of Sefer Malachim because it's a very important conversation there. For now, the 10 tribes are everybody except Binyamin and Levi and Yehuda, and Levi is not counted because Levi is scattered amongst the tribes. Binyamin's role will shift. Here he's part of the rebellion. Later in history, he'll become part of the kingdom of Judah. So that I think is where Chazal saw the trajectory. And the trajectory ultimately leads to Yerovam ben Nevat's declaration, Ma lanu chelek b'David v'lo nachala b'ven Yishai, in exactly the same language as Sheva ben Bichri's rebellion in our story, which is the aftermath of his preferential treatment to Shevet Yehuda over the rest of the tribes of Israel. David is looking... It's almost as if David in his return to Yerushalayim is a very different individual. He's been challenged, rebellion within his ranks. He doesn't know who to trust. He's looking for his loyalists. So he goes back to, you'll forgive me for borrowing a modern political term, but he goes back to his base. And his base is Shevet Yehudah. And it's tragic, but that's what he does. And for a moment, only for a moment, he forgets that he's the king over all of Israel because he's looking for those who are loyal to him and who will stand with him through thick and thin. This is this is what's driving David. Doesn't answer the question yet about Mephibosheth. In the midst of all of this, we have his ruling on Mephibosheth. We kind of digressed into how Chazal saw this, the consequences of not of only Mephibosheth, but of the whole Perek and the conflict with you between Yehuda and the other tribes. It's part of that same story that ultimately leads to the rebellion. So at this point, need to come back to the story of Mephibosheth. How does Mephibosheth end up in this mix? And why is Mephibosheth, or the tragedy of David's behavior towards Mephibosheth, connected to this story? So for that, I want to come back to linking the dots that connect Mephibosheth and David. Remember that it all starts back in Perek Tet, when David is looking for a descendant of the house of Yonatan to pay a debt that he owes to Yonatan. And the debt was to care for Yonatan's children. David and Yonatan had a very special bond. Chazal described the bond between David and Yonatan in Mishnah Pirkei Avot. Kol avashi tliya b'davar batel davar batla ahava, v'she'ina tliya b'davar ina b'tela li'olam. Any love or any relationship that is based on an external factor, that external factor will determine the longevity of the relationship. Ezi avat liabadavar, what kind of relationship is based on an external factor? Avat Amnon v'Tamar. Amnon loved Tamar, but he really lusted for her. And the moment that lust was satisfied, he hated her and he got rid of her. And the kind of abuse or use of Tamar. What is the paradigm of a deep-seated relationship that is not dependent upon a factor, but really a soul connection? Because it says that they were connected in the soul. They were deeply connected in the sense that they shared a certain value, a certain perspective on life, the certain common experiences in the early parts of David's life as a warrior and Yonatan's life as a warrior. The connection between David and Yonatan is deep-seated. And it comes to a head, or comes to a critical moment, when David is facing the test of his life, early life. So I'm going back now to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf. Shmuel Aleph, David is a servant, is a soldier in the army of Shaul. David is connected, has this deep-seated connection to Yonatan. And unfortunately, because Shaul tries to kill David, David is forced to flee for his life. Vayivrach David. And he comes to Yonatan, and I'm not going to go through this whole parak. I think we went through it, we learned it through initially. And he says, this is the famous parak of Macha Chodesh with the arrows and the test, etc. And he says to Yonatan, your father's trying to kill me. Yonatan doesn't believe it. And so they devise a test. And they said, listen, if my father's trying to kill you, I will be the first to acknowledge it and let you run and enable you to run. Shaul is not trying to kill you, then you will return home. Vayomer Yonatan al David, Hashem Elokei Yisrael, ki echkor et avi. I will sound out my father. I will investigate my father. Kein machar shtishit, v'nei tov el David. And if he be good to David, v'lazer shlach alecha, then I'll let you know. But I take an oath. Ko yaseh Hashem li Yonatan v'cho yosif, ki yetiv el avi et hara'a elecha. If my father's intent is evil towards you, then I will also, I promise you, I will let you know. V'shlachtich, I will send you in peace. V'alachta l'shalom. And so it happens. This is the famous Macha Chodesh. Shaul is so angry that David is not there. That Yichra Av Shaul b'Yonatan, And Vayomer lo, he says, Ben Avat Mardut, you son of a rebellion. Which is a way of a biblical curse that has a different language today's kind of in today's vernacular. Halo yadati ki bocher ata leven Yishai levoshtecha ulevoshet rabat imecha. I now know that you chose to side with Yishai, Ben Yishai, rather than to your own shame, to the shame of your mother's nakedness. You are, he accuses him of being an illegitimate child and siding with the rebellion and siding with David. Don't you know that as long as Ben Yishai lives, you will never be king? Bring him to me. He deserves to be put to death. And Yonatan defends David. So what does Shaul do? Vayata Shaul tachanit alav lakoto. He takes the spear and he throws it at Yonatan the same way he threw it at David. Vayeda Yonatan ki chalahi meim aviv lamita David. And at that point, Yonatan truly understands the depth of Shaul's decline into this kind of paranoia, and ultimately desire to put David to death. And Yonatan arose from the table, fierce in anger. And kinet savel David, he's deeply saddened by, grieved for David, for his father has put him to shame. His father tried to just kill him, just to put him in perspective. His father just took the spear to kill Yonatan for having sided with David. So then we have this little trick with the arrows, which we're not going to repeat. We went through it a while ago. Now he sends the Nar home. And now David come, it's Lenegev. David emerges from his hiding place. He falls onto the ground. They bow three times. And they kiss one another. And they embrace and they cry. Ad David Igdil. But David cried more. Come back to that phrase in a minute. Vayomer Yonatan David lech l'shalom. Yonatan says to David, go in peace. Asher nishmanu shneinu acheinu, and shneinu anachnu b'shem Hashem lemor, Hashem yeh beniyu benecho ben zarecha ad olam. They take an oath that God shall be witness to the loyalty and the brit between us and between our children for eternity. Go in peace. My father has truly turned against you. You have no place here. You run now. And so he does. And he runs. So he got up and he left. And Yonatan went back home. And of course, David then goes to Nov, Irakonim, and the consequences of the tragedy of his arrival in Nov, we know. I want to come back to this phrase. Ad David Higdil. They're both crying. Sorry, let me do that again. They're both crying. They're both hugging. They're both embracing. It's a tragic moment for them both. David cried more. Why is it relevant? Obviously, he's the one running away, right? So he's the one running away. The tragedy is greater for him. Maybe Yonatan was afraid if he was cried too loudly, he'd be heard and their secret would be out. Unclear. Why is David crying more? So one of the things we pointed out when we learned this parak the first time is that there's a double tragedy here.
David wanted Yonatan to go with him.
Correct. David anticipated that Yonatan would at least entertain the possibility of coming with him. Especially when you consider the fact that Shaul had just tried to kill Yonatan for having sided with David. Which, by the way, is not the first time Shaul has tried to kill Yonatan. Do you remember the first time Shaul tried to kill Yonatan? way back.
That war?
Yeah, beginning Battle of Michmas. Correct.
And Shaul said no.
Correct. Battle of Michmas, back in chapter 14, when they took fighting against the Plishtim and they took an oath. Shaul made everybody take an oath not to eat in the middle of the battle. And Yonatan had gone off to start the battle on his own. Right. And Shaul said, if it be even my son who violated this oath, I'll put him to death. And the people save his life. Tension between Shaul and Yonatan has been there from the beginning. And Yonatan is not naive. Yonatan knows exactly what is destined to happen. He knows that eventually David is going to become king. He has no illusions that he will emerge to the kingship instead of David. In fact, he says it explicitly. He says it in Parakhav Gimel. Three chapters later, hang on a second, why am I frozen? He says it in Parakhav Gimel, in the midst of the battle, in the story of Ziph, where Shaul and his forces come out to kill David, they find him hiding and they ambush him and they're going to, and the people of Ziph masser on David to Shaul, and Shaul comes with his whole army to kill him. And in the midst of all of that discussion, and Yonatan is part of the army of Shaul coming to kill David. And Yonatan sneaks out in the middle of the night. Vayakam Yonatan ben Shaul. Vayelech al David Chorsha. He comes to David in the middle of the forest. Vayechazek yado be'elokim. And he strengthened his hand in God, meaning he gives him a greeting, Shalom Aleichem, etc. Vayomer elav. And Yonatan says to David, this is three chapters later, Al tira, don't be afraid. Ki lo timtza cha yad Shaul avi. Don't worry, my father's hand is not going to kill you. I know you shall be king over Israel. I'll be your assistant. I'll be your second. I will abdicate the throne. I will move aside. You are the son-in-law of the king. You take over. And you know what? My father knows this too. And they made a brit before God. David remained in the forest. Yonatan went back to his household, meaning to his father's side. So Yonatan comes greeting him in the middle of the battle in secret to tell him, know this, my father knows you will be king, not my father and not me. I'm not in your way. Fine. David remains in the forest. Yonatan returns to his father's side. Ad Davidic deal, this is the critical moment. They are separating. David is going on a journey that is going for years, going to take him on the run running for his life, threatened, etc. Imagine what would have happened and how different David's life would have been if Yonatan ben Shaul had come with him. If Yonatan had sided with David Adasov, in fact, the rebellion would have been over before it started. Everybody knew that Yonatan was the more popular one of the royal family, that Yonatan was far more popular than Shaul. If Yonatan had publicly expressed support for David, the rebellion would have been over before it started. Everybody understood that. In the story of the relationship between David and Yonatan, there is a tragedy that is hidden and unspoken, but it's very much part, but it's a very significant part of the events as they unfold. And that is the moment that Yonatan chose to return to his father's side. And he does it again and again. He does it here, and he does it in Parakhav Gimel. By the way, Michal did it too. Right? When Michal found out that her father was about to kill David, Michal sends David out the window and enables him to escape. But Michal remains behind. So everybody in the house of Shaul is sympathetic to David. But that's just it. Their sympathy stops there. And nobody is prepared to pick up a sword and fight by David's side. And when David says of Shaul and Yonatan in his kino, Hane'avim b'ne'imim b'chayehem, sweet and beloved in their lifetime, uvimotam lo nifradu, but not separated in death. It's a beautiful sentiment to the loyalty of Shaul, of Yonatan to Shaul, but it's also a little bit of a biting criticism. Because the story could have been different. Yonatan could have come with Shaul, with David. And the rebellion could have ended differently. And so for years, David has harbored a, I wouldn't call it resentment, but in the back of his mind, a certain question mark. The house of Shaul, how loyal to him are they really? Michal stays behind. Yonatan stays behind. Yonatan and Perech of Gimel proclaims that David will be king. And yet he stays behind.
But it's still not out of the question that you would have your loyalty to your parents. I mean, that's not totally, this, you know.
I hear that, but this isn't just about parents. This is about Malchus. This is about kingdoms. And this is about the destiny of the Jewish people. And this is about a father who's publicly tried to kill you. And you know that David is the anointed one to be king of Israel. This is about choosing between a father who's gone crazy, literally, and tried to kill David and kill Yonatan versus siding with Yonatan and siding with David and trying to put the rebellion down before it starts. I hear the sympathy and the tragedy. I'm not dismissing the challenge of David's decision, of Yonatan's decision. Yonatan was in a no-win scenario. I would not want to be in Yonatan's shoes. No question.
I mean, basically, all these people are human beings.
Correct.
I mean, you know, Michal stayed there because if she would have gone and they knew they both left, they would have been chasing both of them. So she was gaining time for him. She really went out of her way to save him.
No question.
And Yonatan also went out of his way to save him.
But now put yourself in David's shoes. Right? What has David ever done to any of them to deserve literally having to flee for his life for years and live off the scraps in the street and become this great war, this Robin Hood figure for all these years? What has he done?
No, he's done nothing
express loyalty to Shaul.
Where I am emotionally and mentally.
Right. He's done nothing but been a totally loyal subject and warrior for Shaul, loyal to Michal, loyal to Yonatan. And every time he turns around, somebody in this family has repaid that loyalty with challenge. Twice David had the opportunity to kill Shaul, who was literally being rodefimed for his life, and he doesn't do it. And in the second time, right, that's when Yonatan comes out to him and says to him, "You are going to be king," and then he goes home. Now let's fast forward, and we fast forward to Perek Tetzayin of Shmuel Bet, and David, for the first time since he had to flee Shaul's house, is fleeing the palace of Israel's of the kingdom again. Then it was the palace of Shaul, now it's the palace of David. And David is for the second time in his life going into exile. And you can't escape the moment, right? The parallel to that moment when he's sitting out in the field with Yonatan, and Yonatan says, "Flee for your life." Here he's fleeing for his life as the king of Israel. And Yonatan says, "I feel for you, brother, go. Will you come with me?" No. The David comes to, leaves Yerushalayim, and he's greeted by Tziva, and he says to Tziva, "Aye ben Adonecha. Where is Mephibosheth?" And I fully anticipate that David expected Mephibosheth to stand at his side, like he expected Yonatan to stand at his side and Michal to stand at his side. What you have in this moment is a replay in David's mind of all that has transpired between him and Yonatan. His whole chesed to Mephibosheth was based on Yonatan. And Yonatan was the one who should have come with him at the moment that he fled. And he refused to. And here's Mephibosheth, who owes David his life. And he says, Vayei ben Adonecha. And you know what Tziva says? He's waiting for the Malchus of Shaul. He's standing with his father. He's going home to his father's house. And in David's mind, what David hears is Yonatan's moment of remaining with his father's house and not coming with him into the field. David's reaction to Mephibosheth is not about Mephibosheth. It's about the depth of the challenge and the tragedy that he's had with Yonatan for all these years. The loyalty that he's expressed, but at the same time, the angst he's felt that he's never articulated till now. And here he says it. And he says it, and he declares Mephibosheth guilty of treason. And even when he hears the rationale that Mephibosheth is a cripple and he couldn't have come on his own, and Nebuchadnezzar, what is he going to do? And he says, I don't want to hear anymore. Right? What does he say? He says, I don't want to hear anymore. I've heard enough. You and Tziva will divide the kingdom. I don't think he's talking to Mephibosheth anymore. There's this built up angst, unspoken, of all the years of the frustration, that everything that has transpired was because of that fateful decision of Yonatan not to come with him. Ad David Higdil. And here he sees Mephibosheth repeat exactly the same mistake. Mephibosheth ben Shaul. Yonatan ben Shaul. How long is the loyalty to the house of Shaul, who's dead? How long is the loyalty to the house of Shaul going to haunt David and his kingdom? Unfortunately, it was a mistake. It was a tragic mistake. Only this time, the mistake wasn't Mephibosheth's. This time, the mistake wasn't Yonatan's. This time, the mistake was David's. But I understand where it's coming from. And unfortunately, it's coming from that moment of that tragic decision of Yonatan to stay with Shaul, and now Mephibosheth to stay with Shaul, or at least the ghost of Shaul, in David's mind. And David can't escape it. And that ultimately, I think, is the tragedy of this moment, which is why Chazal identified this moment as the beginning of the split of the kingdom. Because this is really the moment where you see all of the consequences of the tragedy of the latter half of David's life, from Bathsheba and on. All of the tragedies all come down to a misstep here as he returns to Yerushalayim, a misstep that divides the loyalties of Israel and recreates a chasm, a crack, a fault line in the unity of Israel that David fought so hard to create. That fault line has now been sowed. Two generations later, it will erupt. But the fault line is born here, is in his return to Yerushalayim.
Rabbi, if that's the case, why do you think that Binyamin didn't go with the northern kingdom? I mean, all the animosity here, or most of it, is between Binyamin and Yehuda.
Unquestionable. It is an extraordinarily important question. I can't answer it till we get to Sefer Malachim.
Okay.
The answer is, in the beginning, is Binyamin is annexed to Yehuda arbitrarily by the Navi for the sole purpose of preserving the integrity of Yerushalayim. And that's part of the promise to David. So we'll come back to that at the beginning when we look at this in more detail in Sefer Shmuel, in Sefer Malachim. But the question is real. The animosity, the fault line has always been with Binyamin. Shaul's rebellion was from Sheva Binyamin. The line was always between Yehuda in the south and all the other tribes, including Binyamin in the north. Only later in history, in Sefer Melachim, when the kingdom is ultimately split, is Binyamin removed from that northern tribe group and annexed to Yehuda. And there he stays.
And one other question. Avshalom, who was his mother?
It says who his mother is. I believe Ma'acha, hang on a second. Let's go back to this for a minute. That'll be in Shmuel Bet, I think in Perek Hey. Gives us the lineage of all the families. I'd have to look it up. It's listed there. I don't remember offhand, but it's why is it relevant?
Well, the only reason it might be relevant would be if he was a son, Jackie told me, not of Michal.
Michal has no children.
Right. Okay, that's what Jackie told me.
Michal has no children. The children of David in the story, Amnon, Tamar, Avshalom, they're all sons of different wives. Tamar and Avshalom are sisters. Amnon is a half brother because he's a brother from a different wife. And Shlomo is from Bathsheba.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, Michal is out of the picture. Michal has no children. All right, we will stop here, Mizrat Hashem, and we will pick up next week in the beginning of the story of.
Rabbi, I looked at Rabbi Google and it is Macha.
Imacha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was Macha. What we didn't get to now is a little bit of a postscript on the story of Micha ben Mephibosheth. But Mirtz Hashem, next week when we start, I'll kind of start just from that little postscript. It's kind of a glimmer of positive hope that emerges from the story. So we'll start with that next week, and then we'll move on to Perek Yud and Chet.
It's such a sad, sad story, and you wonder why it's developed so fully.
I've said many times, Tanakh is not a happy-go-lucky book. Tanakh is a story, is a text, records all of our mistakes. So when we were doing the right thing, there wasn't much for Tanakh to have to say. So I put that out there as a caveat, that Tanakh tends to focus on our mistakes rather than our positive experiences, but that's just the way it was written. All right.
Learn from our mistakes.
Thank you.